Forbes Books presents Sustainable Leadership and Disruptive Growth with David Radlow. Transformation for a new and better world. Here's David.
My guest this week is Jeff Duden, the chairman and CEO of Homefront Brands, a corporate franchisor of home improvement franchisees. Jeff is also the former founder and CEO of Vanaclean. Jeff has more than three decades of experience in the industry, but that's not all. He's a fellow podcaster, Forbes contributor, and author. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. Excited to be here today.
Today, we're going to focus on you. But before we get to the Vanaclean story, you are the definition of a bootstrapping entrepreneur and talk about training the fundamentals that push themselves to compete and strive to lead your team and perform and learn from great coaching. Can you tell me about your education as a student and athlete, as well as content and context as you started your own painting and repair business in college while going to school and playing football?
Sure, David, I'd be happy to. So my background, I'm a Chicago guy originally. So I grew up in Chicago playing largely basketball growing up. And then I came to football late as a kind of a junior in high school. And then also, you know, working the trades like so many of us did, moving and storage, concrete, construction, painting, things like that. So as I was looking at getting out of school, and I said, well, this, I came to football late and I decided I want to chase a football around. So I walked on to a school. I wasn't a great student, so that cut down my options. And I walked on to a school called the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls, Iowa. That didn't work out so well for a variety of reasons. So I dropped back to kind of a football factory in Chicago, Harper Junior College. And from there, I got a scholarship out to Appalachian State University back in 1989. And I borrowed my mom's car. It was a 1972 Buick LeSabre, so it was definitely on its last legs, ragtop with not much of the rag left on the top, and drove it across the country and parked it in student housing, and I never went back to get it. It was a one-way trip, and I showed up with my grocery bag worth of T-shirts and clothes and went there to play football. So what I learned was that I loved it there. Boone, North Carolina is on top of a mountain. This beautiful scenic area, and I wanted to stay there over the summer, but I really couldn't afford to do it. So my roommate, I talked him into starting a painting business, which is one of the most efficient businesses you can start. You can buy a paintbrush and a ladder and go out and get some work. You know, we were aggressive, and we ended up winning all of the student housing apartment contracts. So we recruited all the athletes that were there over the summer, the basketball players to cut in the ceilings without a ladder, and the wrestlers to paint the baseboards, and we had the football players, you know, rolling with these huge oversized rollers that we built in the shop there at school. And it was a great business. We ended up 15, 20 apartments a day, and I cut my teeth. It's really my first entrepreneurial experience. As I graduated a couple of years later, and I really didn't know what I was going to do, the painting business was actually meeting my needs. I didn't take any job interviews, and a buddy called me and said, hey, this hurricane has hit South Florida, Hurricane Andrew. We're looking for people to help. So my partner and I got in our little four-cylinder Dodge truck with a wooden ladder rack, and we drove down to Florida, kind of into the wild, and we cut our teeth in the insurance restoration business. From there, after 18 months of helping the people of South Florida recover, we moved up to Central Florida with two other business partners. So there was four of us and started the company. And then I moved up to get married. I was engaged at the time to my wife, who I had met my very first week coming to Appalachian State. She took the project on. We have a lot in common. We're both constantly working on me. And so we pursue that together. And I started our second location. From there, we became a mid-sized to large restoration business. We worked, responded to every disaster that hit the United States for the next 25 years. We working in Hawaii and the Caribbean, and we developed a strong capability for government contracting and doing these light environmental services. So we did mold remediation, air duct cleaning, emergency water removal, demolition, things like that, kind of dirty jobs. And over the next 10 years, I ended up buying out all of my partners. When I bought my last one out in 2004, you know, I hired some consultants in, and it was really the first time really an entrepreneur that I learned about vision and purpose and mission and these types of things. And we put together a vision document. And I really chased that for the next 5 years. We used that as a guide. During that year, we bought a bunch of equipment and semi-trucks and campers and trailers and all this equipment. And then sure enough, Hurricane Katrina struck the Gulf Coast in 2005. So we responded down there. We set up for 4 years. And then I really had an impact moment in my life. I was driving home in an RV, and I was driving all night to get to, I had missed the first part of my 7-year-old son's football season. I had 3 children at the time, and I'll never forget it. It was the middle of the night. I'm driving through Atlanta, and I said, this business is growing, but I'm never going to be home. And I had been dabbling around with franchising for 4 or 5 years. And I said, I'm going to, when I get back, I make a decision. I'm going to sell all of my company stores in Florida and the Carolinas under the franchise model, and we're going to pursue building a franchise business. So that's what we did in 2006, 7, and 8. We sold all of our company stores under a franchise model. 2009, we went to the market, and I saw a Facebook post where by 2013, we had already had 130 locations operating. And then I sold the business January 1st, 2019. We had 240 locations in 37 states. That was my journey, and that was my entrepreneurial start. That's how I got here. I owned the company was called Advantaclean. I owned it for 24 years and 11 months, so just shy of 25.
Okay, we're going to take a deep dive into that. We're going to write into Discernment, a Business Athlete's Regimen for a Great Life Through Better Decisions. Joe Moglia, the former head football coach at Coastal Carolina, while serving as chairman of TD Ameritrade, has stated core success in both are intertwined with his BAM culture principles in both athletics and business. Likewise, in your book, Discernment, you write about how entrepreneurs can develop their discernment to choose their right path. Talk to me about the word discernment, how athletics and business are intertwined, and why does it matter to success?
Well, they're tied together in so many ways. So when I started franchising my business, one of the things that I chose to do was I coached over 30 seasons of my children's athletics. And people would say, "Why? How do you take the time to do that when you're trying to build this national brand and you've got so much on the go?" But to me, leadership, the field of leadership, is everywhere. And coaching a group of 12-year-olds over 4 months to compete for a football championship is not dissimilar from coaching a franchisee with 10 employees in Oklahoma City to build a great winning team. The communication, all of those things. So discernment, and discernment's my second book. The first one I wrote was called Hey Coach. And it was what triggered that. I tend to feel compelled to write a book when I see that I'm coming to the end of a phase in my life. And I really believe that people can have many lives within a life, and that the quality of your life is impacted greatly by the quality of your decisions. So when I was coming to the end and I knew that I was going to be exiting Advantaclean and then starting another career, whatever I decided that was going to be, I wanted to document all of the great models of thought that have been poured into me by so many business leaders and peers. And I really wanted to help people who were maybe in their early 20s or early 30s. They were looking at starting a business. How do you make decisions when you're faced with these moments? Because when we look back in our life, we see that we made decisions haphazardly without context or maybe structure, and they took us on a path that completely changed our life. And sometimes in the moment, like I was driving in the middle of the night in that RV, I didn't really realize the full impact of that decision. I just felt like it was something that I needed to do for the next phase of my life, but I didn't realize how it was going to cascade into so many different opportunities for me. So discernment is really, if we think about what's wisdom. Wisdom is an accumulation of models of thought over a lifetime applied to current day events. So if you listen to Ray Dalio's principles, he talks about, this is just another one of those. And so what I've learned in decision making is first to understand, you know, what is my purpose, and is my light switch on or off? Is this decision going to drive me deeper into my purpose that I've done hard work to figure out what that is, and you know, the change that I want to make, the impact that I want to make in the world? And is this decision going to drive me deeper into that purpose or farther from that purpose? How does this decision rank, or how does it align with, you know, who I am and what I believe my values to be, the things that I'll tolerate in my life, things that I won't tolerate? So discernment really is a compilation of ways to use decision filters when you're looking at things, and to make sure that you're constantly preparing yourself for the decisions that you make. One time in a business, I hired an ex-CFO from Pepsi Corporation, and he shared with me that nothing is 100% and anything can go to zero. And your chance of success is really just each decision that you make in your life increases the probability by a couple of points, or it decreases the probability that you're going to get the outcome that you're after. So, you know, that's really what decision is about, and talks about things like, if your life was a balance sheet, what are the equities? How do you, you know, what are the liabilities? What are the things that you do every day that take you farther away from, you know, getting the outcome that you're looking for? And then what are you trying to put in the bank? Things like relationship equity, which is incredibly important in franchising, is to make sure that you're constantly building on the relationship, because franchising is a game of influence, and you're really trying to do everything that you can possibly do to help franchisees be successful. And using data, but also using relationship and influence and, you know, bright spots and everything that you possibly can do to be putting the very best into their heads and their hearts and their minds, so that they can be inspired to take action and transform their life through the business that you're in together. Reputation equity, you know, how important is it? Because our name travels farther than we ever do. And it's so important that we're represented in the right way when we're not in our absence, just like we would be in our presence. So those are the things that discernment talks about. And I think for people that are in the right place, that are really that are, you know, in that I'm trying to grow a business, I'm looking to trust myself to take a chance and to fail fast and to move forward, that it's got some very actionable and practical models of thought in it for them.
So you got in your truck with a friend and drove to Florida to help out with Hurricane Andrew, and then you're dealing with destroyed apartments, mansions, navigating insurance, and rebuilt skyscrapers for 17 months to have a self-made management lesson in the business. How'd you get through those 17 months? How'd you finance everything? How'd you pick out and discern what to take, what not to take, where you could help, where you couldn't help, and what'd you get? What were the lessons learned out of those 17 months?
I will tell you, the lessons learned are, half of life is just showing up. You know, very few things happen until you get up and you go somewhere and you put yourself out there. So, and you never know what the get's going to be when you're at the beginning of it. I looked at my fiance or my girlfriend at the time, and I said, I'll be back in 3 weeks. You know, it was 3 years later I came back. She wasn't exactly where I left her, but I could still find her. And, you know, we maintained our relationship during that time, thankfully. So you know, everything that you do, there's a trade-off. I mean, I threw away a perfectly good restoration business, environmental services business, in favor of franchising it. And that was a huge sacrifice, because the business that I had was providing for me very well. It was growing in value. It was a great asset. But I knew that a franchise business, if successful, would cannibalize it. So we went down to Florida. You know, there's licensing requirements. So we connected with a company that my buddy was working for. But we became, at first, subcontractors to it. And we went out and were able to source our own projects. I mean, they were everywhere. I think we were somewhere around Fort Lauderdale heading down 95. And when we came over, there was nothing damaged. And then we came over this crest of a hill. And as far as you could see on both sides of the interstate, miles and miles and miles, there wasn't a roof on the building. There was some blue tarps at this point, but not a lot. there was Home Depots and wall, you know, big box buildings that had walls missing, and the I-beams were twisted like pretzels. I mean, the power that must have been to twist an 18 or 24 month I-beam, you know, like that, and to damage it. And then we drove for 2 hours, all the way down 95, all the way down US 1, all the way down to Hollandale, down to you know, Cutler Ridge and Homestead area, and it was the same. So there was no shortage of opportunity to help people with their properties in terms of getting them cleaned up and making them safe for them so that they could start the rebuilding process. So that's what we did, and we were able to secure our own jobs, and we worked with those people. But very quickly, what we found out was, you know, they were they appreciated our talent, they appreciated our hustle, so they offered us the opportunity to take our jobs and throw them in with them and to take positions with the company. And that's what we did. So we worked there and worked our way up through the business. And because of that, we were, you know, in our early 20s, but we were able to get in front of condominium associations that had tens of millions of dollars of damage and speak in front of people and learn how to process insurance claims and all of the technical sides of the insurance business. So it was a baptism by fire, and we could have never learned what we learned in the pace and the rate that we did other than by going through it. And it's kind of like a boot camp in the military or double sessions for a few weeks before a football season. You know, you're really getting everything in an accelerated rate, and they paid us very well. And so we're a couple of 20-something-year-old guys, and we're living in South Florida, and the Keys was relatively undamaged. So, you know, on the weekends we could shoot down there. It was really a good time for us, and we had the energy to work all day and all night. And so it was a very valuable experience for us in doing that. Now, when we started our business and funding it, it was literally it's interesting. We all decided that we were all going to put in $5,000 to start the business. And, you know, I don't think I had $5,000 quite all together. So I came back up to Boone, North Carolina. And my brother, who ended his career as the CFO of the Carolina Panthers, well, when I went to App State, he was washing cars at Schaumburg Toyota, going to the same junior college. So I said, well, why don't you come out here and take over the painting business. He put himself through college, being a landlord of a house that I had bought and running the painting business. And he did exceptionally well. Went to Arthur Anderson, which I think I said earlier, nothing's 100% and anything can go to zero. So he was there when Arthur Anderson went to zero. And he was a very loyal employee, and he stayed to the very end. He said, I'm not going to leave these people. They've done everything for me. I said, well, how long can you stay after they stop paying you? He's like, well, that's a pretty good point. And he ended up going and taking a move over there with the Carolina Panthers. And he ended up there for 16 years. And he helped. He was on the deal team when Mr. Richardson sold the team to Mr. Tepper a few years back. But anyway, I'd gone up there and I had this Toyota truck that I had paid off. So we went down to the Wachovia Bank at the time, and I took a $5,000 loan out on the truck, and I took the check and I handed him the payment book and the title, and I said, this is your truck now, and you make the payments from the business, and I'm going to take this $5,000 and head back down to Florida and start this this restoration business with these other fellas.
Okay, you met up with two partners in Central Florida that backed you guys, and then it was a 51-49% deal. And basically, you got creative and threw in the Florida Gator colors and got another 1%.
Oh, man, I tell you what, that 1% was, if you looking back on it and being so young, and there was four partners. One was my partner from college, and then these two other gentlemen, which were great. They were 10, 11 years older than us. They had advanced degrees in building construction. They had good careers and resumes, and but they were like, well, we're more experienced, so we should get the 51% share of the business and you guys should get the 49%. And I'm not sure how or why it had about me to think that, you know, I really don't want to be in that situation to where we don't have control or at least have a fair say in what goes on. So We were in the process of branding the business, and I said, look, guys, I tell you what, you know, orange is a good safety color. Blue is a very durable color, and it was on the palette of options for how we're going to brand the company. I'll tell you what, we'll do the Florida, and they were both raving Florida Gators alumni. So I said, we'll do Florida Gator colors, but this has to be, you know, four ways, 25% apiece. And thank goodness that we did, because one of the partners left in about a year and a half, which wasn't so bad. My partner left about 6 years, 5 to 6 years later. My partner that I came down with from college. And, you know, that was, the business had advanced. So that was, there was more to talk about there. And then my last partner, who was a great mentor to me, and, you know, but his vision, you know, part of building a franchise business is you've got to have a big vision. You got to build a dream that's big enough for other people's dreams to fit inside of it. And you have to do that from speaking a powerful future into existence, but you also have to do it structurally. And, you know, the brand has to be relevant at the local brand. And so it's a big deal. It's not easy to, you know, the universe doesn't conspire to give you a national brand. So there's a lot of work to it. And my last partner, he wasn't up for it. He was very comfortable doing what we were doing. And so that was a very amicable. We hired somebody to navigate that for us. And it was funny. He said, this is the first negotiation that I've ever been in that the seller is trying to give the buyer more, and the buyer is trying to convince the seller that he needs less. So we were negotiating against each other because, you know, I think we both wanted to make it a fair deal, and he needed to, at the time in his life, he needed to go away. He wasn't tolerating the, you know, the stress of the business that well. And of course I was trying to take the business. I was like, look, we've got a, you know, we have an opportunity here, and my appetite is large to try to build something great. I don't know what it's going to look like exactly, but you know, that's what I want to do. So it was a very amicable part. But then I was alone. I was alone in the business, and I had acquired everything, all the real estate. We had acquired a lot of real estate over several states, and I had a large direct business going on, and then I had this franchise business with nothing in it. But I had paid a good price to get the opportunity to win with it. And so that's how that shook out.
Big swings, big risk. Your level of risk tolerance is obviously pretty good, okay, with your probabilities, not absolutes. $4 million in debt. You did about $4 million in business in 90 days, you know, chasing hurricane cleanup. What do you mean business athletes deal with scenarios, not rules?
You know, I think that, you know, scenario planning and the ability to consider alternative potential futures at the same time, I think is a hallmark of good business builders. You can never anticipate everything that's going to happen, but you can certainly try to ascertain, you know, what is the most likely outcome of certain actions. You take what you have, and then you contemplate, what are the actions that I can take on these assets? And if I take an action on the assets that I have, what is the potential outcomes? What is the array of outcomes that could happen? That could be anything from a key employee, you know, letting them go versus promoting them. It could be anything from acquiring a business unit or rolling out a new line of business. But ultimately, you know, the ability to assess scenarios. One of the things that's valuable to do is, you know, when you're making a decision, is what's the worst case scenario? I've seen business units and business leaders that are vacillating over a potential decision, and then I say, all right, what's the worst scenario on the downside that could happen? And there's really almost none. It's like, well, okay, well then taking an action and making a decision is much better than no decision, because that's going to accelerate your speed and the velocity of the business because you've made a decision and you're acting against it. So I think using scenarios and using scenario planning inside of your decision-making process is something that I think good businesses are learn to do.
So you were generating some cash flow here and planning while you're waiting for the next disaster or disasters to hit. Is that fair or is that not fair?
Yeah, so what we did was, you know, you can never count on a disaster. It kind of sounds terrible, even though, you know, that you're sitting here to do it. But companies in that industry, you know, there's daily bread that you get in local markets. So one of our services was mold remediation. So anytime, at least for a number of years, you know, there's a real estate transaction, there's a crawl space, you know, they're going to do an assessment to see if there's any remediation work that needs to be done to make the house clean, safe, and healthy, or the business clean, safe, and healthy. Commercial air duct cleaning, you know, high dusting and air duct cleaning in manufacturing plants, things like that. So we developed a line of services that was really independent of disasters. And also, we had a percentage of our business that was independent of insurance companies. Because certainly with our emergency water damage and some of the things that we did, those were insurance company paid. And sometimes you have to wait on your money in those scenarios. So we also, you know, we built a nice diversification of revenue streams and also the type of revenue, some of which with our sealed crawl space offerings, you could get a deposit on before you started the job. And then you could collect it on the last day. Other things, when you're working commercially or you're working for a national chain, big box retailers like we did, I mean, you might not get paid for 90 days or 120 days. So yeah, I mean, cash is king, but equity is the kingdom. That's what I've learned in my career.
I love that. Thanks for sharing that. Okay, Jeff, there's more for us to discuss, but we have to stop right here. Coming up in the second part of my conversation with Jeff Tunan, the chairman and CEO of Homefront Brands, Jeff shares his passion for entrepreneurship.
Time and love are our two greatest assets, and the time spent building a business and creating some equity and the confidence and significance that you feel from, you know, standing on nothing and creating something, there's really nothing like it.
To connect with David, go to davidradlow.com. David's book set, The Principles of Cartel Disruption and Secret Stories of Leadership, Growth, and Innovation, are available wherever books are sold. This has been Sustainable Leadership and Disruptive Growth with David Radlow, a presentation of Forbes Books.